Please welcome Mr. BXF, Chris Lennon.
I thought I said I was trying to shed the Mr. BXF thing. All right, well, thank you. You guys can count yourselves among the hearty ones. Thanks for coming out at 8:30 in the morning on TV day. Really appreciate it on a bit of a dreary day. And hope I'll make it worthwhile for you and start things off with a bit of a bang here. So here to talk about a problem that we've been trying to solve both at Ross Video and industry-wide, which is making all this stuff that's moving to the cloud work together. May sound obvious, but for those who have tried, you know it doesn't just happen on its own. So, you know, there were three things really that motivated us to take a step back and try to address this problem of interoperability in the cloud. So, first of all, you know, cloud computing is not a fad. It's obviously a real thing that's coming into media production, media workflow, media distribution, you name it. And it's not going away, obviously. As such, we need to make sure that this stuff works across all the different vendors that are out there. As much as us being Ross Video and selling all kinds of stuff, we'd love you to buy everything from us, we know that's not realistic. The realistic world that we're in here is you buy things from whatever vendors you like and you expect them all to work together. That doesn't necessarily happen on its own. And then finally, with the move to the cloud, a really big concern is securing both the media and the messages that control the media out there. As we all know, media companies have become targets of late of all kinds of bad actors all over the world. And as we move away from having our facilities and our systems air-gapped from the internet, to actually being up on the cloud, on the internet, we need to really take another look at security. So those were kind of our three things of, okay, here are three issues that we really need to pay attention to and try to solve. So, you know, the elevator pitch here is, wouldn't it be great if we could make it really simple to secure, you notice I've got security as the number one word here, to secure, first of all, connect and control a multi-vendor ecosystem of media processing services and microservices and whatever. So wouldn't that be great? And it'd be great if we were already there, but we're certainly not. So, you know, how do you do that? Well, we thought one company can't possibly do this on their own. You can't just do this unilaterally and say, hey, here's the answer to all the industry's woes, and just do this and everything will be great. We thought that was kind of the wrong way of doing it. So we thought the best way to do it is let's try to get everybody in the industry who agrees that interoperability in the cloud is lacking right now and needs some help, and let's get them together and have them work together in a room and try to standardize all of this as much as possible. And by standardize, I mean actual standards, best practices, things like that. But at least come to some fundamental agreements on how we can make all this work. Another point I want to make here is we're not just talking services in the cloud or microservices in the cloud. We're talking, the most environments today are hybrid environments where you've got some things in the cloud, some things on-prem. You want all of this to work equally well regardless of where your devices, services, microservices might be. So that's kind of, you know, where we're coming from. So as part of all that, you know, there's a few things we needed to approach here. I pointed out, you know, the multi-vendor thing being critical. You know, we need to get buy-in from as many vendors as possible if this is really going to work. Needs to be able to scale up to the type of needs that people have today, particularly when you're moving to the cloud. And I apologize for a buzzword so early in the morning, but plug and play is a big thing. And you know, if you're in the television business, you can't shut things down when you add things in, right? You know, when you add a new service in, a new device in, Our operations are running all the time, so you really do need something that plugs and plays while things are operational, that you can just dynamically add something in, get it recognized, and continue about your day. So those were kind of the key goals that we focused on. Like any initiative, you got to have a catchy name, right? If people are going to latch onto it, you got to have some kind of a name for it. So we came up with this name, Katina, and it actually isn't just a random word that sounds good. It's a word that means a connected series of related things, which is what this is all about, connecting a series of related services, devices, that sort of thing. So we thought it was kind of a cute name. The other important point here is this Katina initiative, which is an open standards, open source initiative, is based on technology that's already really well proven. I suspect a lot of you have heard of OpenGear before. OpenGear has been around for 15, 16 years now. And as such, it was designed around a purely on-prem environment, and it worked really well as a platform and a protocol for connecting multi-vendor products. However, again, being 15, 16 years ago, nobody was thinking about media in the cloud back then, and it falls short when it comes to media in the cloud. So we came up with this Katina idea and said, well, rather than starting with a clean sheet of paper, it might make sense to pull what makes what really works well and is already proven with OpenGear. And we like to say, OpenGear right now, at this second I'm speaking, there are literally hundreds of thousands of OpenGear messages floating through the ether controlling television products around the world. So well proven, it's solid, it scales, it does great on-prem. If we could extend that to the cloud and make it open to everybody, hey, wouldn't that be great? And so that's really what we did. So at the basis of this whole OpenGear thing that's out there presently and has been out there for a long time is something called OGP. It's OpenGear Protocol, which is a protocol that makes all this communicate successfully. It is not open source. It's not a standard. It has traditionally been owned and controlled by Ross Video. And we decided, with the move to the cloud, that's not really the business we want to be in, particularly the type of scale that you're talking about in terms of the number of vendors who are involved and potentially the number of services that are involved. That's not our core business. And so we said, rather than continue that model when we're doing Katina, let's open source it, let's make it an open standard, and let it succeed on its own. And so that's kind of what we've done. OpenGear, by the way, will continue to exist. It's not going away. But this allows Katina allows you to add in all of your services and products that are on the cloud. So again, open source is a key part of this, that we want this to be open to the world, that anybody can go up on GitHub, grab Katina, grab some help from some SDKs, and implement it themselves, rather rapidly. How are we doing that? So we're doing this initially we took this to the group called the OSA, the Open Services Alliance, which I happen to run, just coincidentally. We took it to them, and we've been running this process through the OSA for a period of several months. We really started it in earnest around May of this year, so this is all very, very new, with the target of transitioning this over to the SMPTE standards community by the end of this year. So pretty quick. This is not your typical standards process that takes 5-10 years. That's not going to work in the world of the cloud and microservices. If this is going to succeed, it's got to be developed rather quickly and get it in people's hands to play with and give us feedback with as quickly as possible. As I kind of hinted, in addition to the actual code, we plan to create a set of open source libraries that'll help you along with how do I implement this in my products. So that's kind of the goal with how we're going to roll this out. You also, of course, need some documentation around this. And so our vision is a suite of documents that'll cover some or all, we'll see, of the topics that are listed on here, but basically documenting how do you use all this stuff that we're putting out on GitHub for you. And that's really, when you talk about SMPTE standards or SMPTE recommended practices, they're all about documents that then point to code, SDKs, and that sort of thing. So an important point, and I kind of hinted at this earlier, is Katina, I among others, tend to fall into the trap of, well, this is just for microservices. That's not really true. It is for microservices, but it's what's really cool about this is it scales up all the way from a microservice that does one thing and one thing really, really well to an incredibly complex device, say a router, switcher, whatever, that does a ton of different things and everything in between. So that's a bit of a challenge, but it is architected to scale all the way from small to big devices and services. And as I kind of mentioned before, on the cloud and on-prem, and a mix of the two, which is really the reality that we're in right now, and I think for the foreseeable future, right? Every 100% of everything is not in the cloud today, nor will it be any time in the future. We're in a transitionary period at the moment. So we need to support that. So this just kind of illustrates what I'm talking about, that you know, at the core of Katina, you've got a device, right? And like I said, it could be something huge, it could be something very small, and there's some of the pictures on here. It can even be something that does not directly touch media. It's Katina is generic enough that it can control things like on the far right here, you see this is a robot for a camera. Well, that doesn't necessarily directly touch media. Katina can control that. Do you want something to control your lighting grid? Katina can do that too. Do you want something to control your coffee maker to wake up your staff in the morning? Katina could do that as well. So it's generic enough that it could apply to a variety of devices. And so don't just think of it as your traditional media devices. It can be really anything. But yeah, specialized around media devices. So I'm not going to go really, really deeply into the data model, but just to kind of give you a taste of how it works. And you'll see here on the right, these cute little graphics aren't just cute little graphics. It's again illustrating that some of this is for the cloud, some of it's to embed in a hardware, some of it is to put on VMs. But basically, we have parameters that we can use to control all of these devices here, statuses so that a device can say, hey, I'm playing a video clip. Here's where I am, here's the time code that I'm at, that sort of thing. Or I'm an audio meter, and here's the level that I'm at. Those are a couple of very simple examples of it. So it's about control, it's about getting statuses back. And we'll talk a little bit about the commands and parameters here in a minute. So, how does this work in a dynamic plug-and-play environment? And that's really kind of an important tenet of this whole thing. So we need to have devices that are capable of being able to describe what they do and say, hey, I just got plugged in. I'm a router, and here are all the different functions I can do. Here's how you can do them with me. So it's basically, who am I? How do I run? Here's the commands you can use to control me, and go ahead and do that. So again, that has to happen in real time as things are running. How do we deal with really complex devices? Like a microservice is really simple, right? It's like, hey, I can do one thing. Here's a few parameters you can use. Here's the commands you can use, and you're good to go. When you're talking about a very complex device that might have what we would term sub-devices underneath it, that it can do multiple things. The structure does allow for that, but with something called sub-devices, you can kind of see here that we can have a big device with a unlimited number of these sub-devices underneath it, each one of which has its own parameters, its own commands to control it, and menus, which we'll talk about in a few slides here. So again, scalable, extensible to really as complex a device as you want to define. So these parameters we're talking about, so parameters for controlling devices, really fairly simple. Each parameter has a type, you know, common types, integers, floating point, string, whatever. It could be a single value, or it could be a whole array or a structure of parameters. You can do that. And each of these parameters can have constraints. So it's valid values are within a range of between this value and this value, or an enumerated list of text values, that sort of thing. And then finally, I'm going to dive into this toward the end here, a UI widget hint, which is pretty cool, but we'll come back to that. So, I was mentioning parameters and commands up there, and so they're very, very similar structures in the Catena world, but really there's an important difference here. So a parameter is basically any value to do with a device that generally is read, so it could be status information, it could be anything, can be modifiable, but it's in a lot of cases just read-only because it's status values, whereas commands are things saying do this and do this now, and each one of those can have a certain number of parameters. So I want you to play this video clip. And here are I want you to start it at this SOM, for instance. That could be an example of a command. And so, to kind of sum it out, so parameters actually do have a state where commands are stateless. They're just like, go ahead and do this. Underlying all of this, so how do we keep all this straight? I mentioned that you could have hundreds of thousands of these messages flowing across in any particular microsecond. How do we keep all these straight? Well, each one of these parameters and or commands have something that we call an OID, an object identifier, which is basically just a unique identifier to that parameter or command that keeps it straight. So, as an example, if we had a very simple service and all it can do is play one channel of video, all we ask on the Catena side is that we can discover that service that can do that, that it be able to provide the status parameters. What is the playout state? What are the audio meter values? Sync status, things like that. Control parameters, I kind of mentioned that. Inpoint and outpoint values would be a good example for playing one channel of video. And you could also get down to the level of I want to play at 2x speed, and other type of special commands. That's really at the base of the protocol. That's really how it all works. Also, really important that because of the need to be able to scale this up to having a ton of different devices out there and a lot of messages flowing. This is all very asynchronous in nature, and without doing that, this couldn't possibly scale up to the scale that we require. Let's see. The other thing is where we talk about those sub-devices. If we want to control some sub-devices, we can narrow down the traffic to only talking to that sub-device. Also helps a great deal again with scaling. Cutting down on network traffic, as you can imagine, if you're dealing with hundreds of thousands of these messages going across, you could bog down a network really, really quickly if you weren't careful. And so we are careful. Security. I had that up at the very top, right, of the requirements here. Not an afterthought, not even a second thought. It was the very first thing that we looked at with Catena. It was really one of the main motivators for building Catena. Was security, which is absolutely critical when you're moving things up to the cloud. The conclusion we came to really pretty quickly in architecting this was that we really liked the zero trust model, which is basically trust no one, trust nothing, until they establish their credentials that they are trustworthy. And so that, you know, we thought that was the right way to do this. So assume absolutely nothing. And so, you know, we looked at what prior work has been done around Zero Trust, and we found that the Advanced Media Workflow Association, AMWA, has done something called IS-10, if you're familiar with that, that uses something called OAuth-2, but restricts it down and makes it really more appropriate to a media environment. And we're like, great, this is less that we have to worry about. So why don't we just reference IS-10 and take exactly the same approach that it does? So we did. Ultimately, this whole thing is defined by NIST, the whole OAuth-2 profile. Again, we're taking AMWA's take on that as part of Katina. We are seeing this as a major trend as we respond to RFPs out there in the field right now. We're seeing Zero Trust as a requirement when people are speccing cloud-based systems. So again, this can help to tick that box. That's kind of what we're doing. How this works, and I'm not going to kind of do a full dive into how IS-10 and OAuth-2 work, but generally, if you go from left to right here, where we've got in this case, it looks like a person. It could be a person, it could be a system, it could be a service. It's somebody asking for access. If they ask for access, they have to go through something called a PEP, a policy enforcement point. So this is like the traffic cop, right? Who's in the middle and says who gets in and who doesn't get in. It goes up and talks to something called a policy decision point, says, hey, so-and-so is asking to do this. Should I grant it? Should I not grant it? The decision is made, and if access is granted, it flows through. If not, of course, the request is refused. That's really as simple as it is. The nice thing about this model is you're not required within every device that Katina controls or within every service to actually have this embedded in your service or in your device. Because, again, this could be fairly involved to implement. You could have a separate quote-unquote box or service that actually does all of this enforcement separately for you. So you can either incorporate this natively in your device, you know, and a lot of devices and services have Zero Trust within it already, but you don't necessarily have to if it's a device that doesn't. So that's kind of the approach that we've taken on it. So I think I just kind of spoiled this next slide. We kind of talked already about kind of what this does. It does have the concept of read-only. So if you do have access to simply read something and not write it, you can absolutely do that. One thing that, and again, speaking about performance and scalability, there were some things in OAuth-2 that we did not like, such as if you think about, let's say we're polling an audio meter whose values are being sent to us constantly. If you were to follow OAuth-2 to the T, you would have to recheck the authorization every time you get a value from the audio meter. That would be a complete nightmare, right? We'd bog down the whole network. It would not work. So when I say that we've taken OAuth-2 and taking our own spin on it, that's some of the stuff that we've done in order to make this performant. We said, okay, you're the same audio meter that I just got a reading from a second ago. I'm trusting that nothing has changed in the last second. I can still trust you. That sort of thing. That's kind of what we've done. We are expecting that we'll have a number of these EGs, engineering guidelines, or recommended practices around this to say, hey, we're using OAuth-2, but here's how we're doing it a little bit differently for Katina. So that's how we envision all of this panning out. Like I said, IS-10 from AMWA is being used for all this. I think I've kind of already jumped ahead, but you can imagine at the bottom point here, where you deal with the number of clients we're talking about, the number of devices we're talking about, and access scopes, and I think I'm going to talk about access scopes on the next slide. can become really, really, really big in a hurry. Again, we keep that in mind and make sure that this is not going to cause performance issues. So speaking of access scopes, I'm going to apologize in advance. We've added yet another acronym to your lexicon in the world of television. We think it's kind of cute, though. We're doing Katina with gusto. It's the Grand Unified Scopes Theory Optimized. Otherwise, if we didn't have the O in there, it'd be gust, and it would sound like we're full of hot air or something. So we had to add the O in there to say it's optimized. Anyway, but gusto, seriously, is something that, that is really important. And this is, if you're talking about users having access to devices and services that are controlled by Katina, this is incredibly important. So this is role-based access control. So your access control is based on what, not who you are, but what role are you fulfilling? So are you, for instance, are you a journalist? Are you a producer? Are you a tech director? Are you in security? Whatever. Each one of these roles should have its own set of access. You know, this is a nod to the fact that, you know, one person could serve multiple roles. Today I'm a journalist, tomorrow I'm producing. Should I have the same access? No, definitely not. You should have access based on what you're doing on that particular production, show, whatever. And so that's really what gusto is all about, is having these sets of roles defined and then tick boxes that identify what that person or service can access. What we do within Katina is, if you're a device, we want you to tell us, of all these commands that I can control you with, what's the risk level of each of these commands? From this could take us off air to this isn't really going to impact anything if you execute this command, and everything in between. So we need to understand what the risk is of all these, so we can assign the access scopes from these different types of players who would want access. And so that's kind of the idea here. This is just an example at the bottom of, you know, let's say I've got a producer in New York City producing a program. I have those rights. I go to service A, which is, you know, playing out a particular channel on a server. And it takes those rights over to another service that does, for some reason, a 90-degree rotation of the video. Kind of a bad example, but you know, you get the idea that there's these different services that can do different things to the video, and my based on my rights access, I can either do them or I can't do them. Or I can get read-only. All right, so that's as deep as we're going to go on the protocol. If you want more information, we can join the group and we can go into that a little bit more. How do we actually support this communication between the devices? That was really an important question for us. And because we're supporting this dynamic plug-and-play communication, we need to be able to serialize the data coming in, deserialize it on the way out, and really what we came up with, again, we looked at what has been done out there in the wild that we can borrow from and hopefully not reinvent. And I don't know how many people are familiar with gRPC, but this is Google's remote procedure call, and we thought, this is exactly what we need for Katina. Very cool. If we jump down to the gRPC definition on this slide, so bidirectional operation is possible here. You can push these commands from the server side of things, from the client side of things. We can deal with those access scopes we're talking about. It's very performant. It's very lean in terms of the messages that we are transporting. It handles certificate management, really everything that we were looking for here. You also notice I skipped over at the top Proto 3. We also found and really liked protobufs as a way to get this out in a variety of languages. And so all the SDKs that we are creating for this, We plan on getting them out in, at the very least, Java, C++, Go, Python. We could do other flavors as those are needed. So again, not inventing things where we don't have to. Yeah, where we could point to something that's already been done by somebody, great. We'll do that, inherit it, and particularly where it's something that's already been embraced by a lot of people in the IT community. So orchestration, you know, this is kind of the natural question that comes up when we talk about Katina and being able to control all these devices. They're like, oh, so this is an orchestration engine? No, it's not. It's definitely not an orchestration engine. It's not any kind of a tool around orchestration. It enables orchestration. You can still use whatever orchestrator you prefer. This just makes the job of the orchestration engine that much easier. And so, you know, for when we talk about orchestration in Katina, again, this can be an overloaded term. People have different definitions of it. But what we're talking about is orchestration is everything you need to do to get a device ready to use. And then also, of course, once it's being used, monitoring its health and, you know, making sure it's running, that sort of thing. And the ability to repair any problems that might exist. And so our attitude was, there are plenty of companies and products out there that do this and do this really well already, so we're not going to reinvent that. You probably have your favorite orchestration tool. That's great. Go ahead and use that. One thing that we've been getting questions on, though, and I put that at the bottom here as kind of an open question, is, are we being too generic by just saying, well, just do whatever you want in terms of orchestration? Should we be recommending an existing technology stack for that? Again, we're not experts on this, but we're kind of looking to the community out there for advice on it. And I actually had somebody come up to me at a trade show recently saying, can you recommend an open source orchestrator that would work well with Katina? And I'm like, don't know. That's an interesting question. Are there any good open source orchestrators out there? So we have that as an open question. And if there was a really good one out there, maybe we would point to that with Katina for people who are looking for something very, very lightweight. Let's see. Yes, so I talked about UI menu hints. This might seem like a huge departure from all the nuts and bolts that we've been talking about in terms of security and commands and parameters and all that. But this is actually, I think, one of the coolest things that we have within Katina. Within Katina, when you define a device within Katina, you can provide what we call UI hints. And this is, how would you represent the controls for your device on a UI? So again, if you had an orchestrator out there, or you had a control system that was going to be controlling your device using Katina, is a slider the best way to manipulate this particular value, or a dial, or some kind of a switch, all virtual on a screen? Just give us a hint of what would be the best way to represent this type of parameter. So we think that's pretty cool. We put that in there. It's not a must, but it's just a helpful tool for anybody who wants to control your device to stand up a UI really, really quickly, because they'll know right away what type of control you would prefer that they use for that. So we think that's kind of a cool feature. And it's important to note that this does not replace, the entire device UI. It's just for those types of parameters that you allow external control of, and making it as easy as possible for them to do that. And just a note at the bottom, if you are familiar with the Open Gear protocol, there actually is a whole markup language for these UI hints called, not surprisingly, OGL-ML, our markup language for Open Gear. And we are not necessarily planning on making that markup language part of the Katina specification, but it would work if you wanted to. And, our mind may change on that, but as of right now, that's not planned to be. We're just going to have the hints in there, not the markup language as part of the standard. I've kind of talked around from the very beginning this morning about discovering devices. That's kind of the key, right, is being able to discover and stand up a device quickly and easily, and be able to get its devices, get its status at any time. So one thing we have been looking at, you might, again, if you're familiar with AMWA's ISs, their implementation specifications, you might be familiar with something called ISO 4, which is labeled discovery. So we have actually been looking at that and thinking, how much of that do we want to inherit into Gatina? And we're in the process of determining how much of that we want to put in there or not. So, you know, just to wrap up in time for if you've got a few questions, you know, we think this solves, and since we first started talking about this, really started socializing this about a year ago, I have yet to hear from anybody saying, this is a terrible idea, stop doing this, somebody else has already done this, or, you know, that this is not worthwhile, this is a waste of your time. It's been universal from customers, from fellow vendors, and even from the big platform providers, the AWS's, Google's, that sort of thing out there, have been saying, this is a great thing. This helps to solve the biggest problem that we've got coming at us that a lot of people don't realize is coming at us as we move to media in the cloud. And so if you want to get involved in this, you know, I've again mentioned this is an open source, open standards effort. We are in the process of standing up two GitHub repositories, one on the ROS Video GitHub repository, another one on SMPTE's. We expect those to be stood up certainly by the end of the year, hopefully sooner than that. We actually have all the objects ready to put up there now and are just working through some final details. And if you want to be involved in the actual development of this, because as I characterize it, this is all brand new. We've only been working on this a few months now. And we will be working on it for who knows how long going forward. We would love to have you involved. We think that the user's voice is absolutely key in this to make sure that this is addressing everything that you need. And so if you'd like to get involved, the best way to do that would be probably just to contact me directly. And I think I had a slide there that actually had my contact information. I don't know if it's possible to switch back to my slide deck. Let's see here. Yeah, that's just the timeline. And no, I didn't. Okay. Well, it's very easy. It's chris.lennon@rosvideo.com. Please contact me if you're interested in getting involved with this, and I'll give you all the gory details of how to get involved with it. But this will be an ongoing project within SMPTE. Like I said, we plan on handing this over to the SMPTE standards community by the end of the year, at least the first parts of it. This is, like I characterize, going to be multiple documents and an ongoing project. So. Thank you for your 8:30 a.m. attention on a rainy day. Really appreciate it. And I think we do have a few minutes for any questions, if you have any.
This is my question, not one of the texts. So as I'm thinking about, you know, a video system in the cloud, I guess, and, you know, ROS products, kind of what comes to mind for me, and I guess what I'm going to ask you is if you can let me know if I'm conceiving this right, and if maybe there are other applications that I'm missing, but say at a TV studio, we would have, you know, a director sitting in a booth with all of our different audio video elements, you know, mics, different video sources, things like that, and, you know, be sitting down with something like OverDrive. And then with a system like this, would we be kind of piping all those individual elements through equipment out into the cloud where it then gets processed and comes back to us as a finished product? Is that kind of the core idea with this sort of thing?
Yeah, the idea behind this is having a single protocol that you can use for all these devices, regardless of whether they're ROS Video or somebody else, that gives a consistent protocol and a consistent way of controlling all of these devices in the cloud in concert with those things that you've got, you know, on-prem as well. So yes, this would be a protocol that could underlie, and we're building this into OverDrive and other, and pretty much all of our ROS video products on an ongoing basis now. So, but basically it's an easier way, a standardized way, rather than us having to deal with each device's individual protocol to control them in a consistent way, if that helps.
Sure, and I guess with the wider concept of cloud video processing, you know, the example I gave was just a live production. Are there other sorts of applications that you're thinking are going to become more common for this sort of workflow?
Yeah, we think it's generic enough that it could apply to a wide variety of applications. Like we said, you could use it for things that aren't even media, theoretically, because it really is just like, hey, I'm a device, and here's what I can do. Here's how you can control me. Here's the status parameters I can provide. But you know, having said that, you know, ROS Video has been the initiator of this, and our background and our focus is live production. So there's absolutely, you know, kind of a bias toward that. But you know, we've tried to build it in a way that's generic enough that it could be used for, you know, applications that we haven't even envisioned yet. And I think that's always the measure of a good initiative or a good standard, is that it gets implemented for things that the people who created it never visualized in the beginning, and that's a measure of you've done a good job if you've done that. So we have kind of kept that in the back of our minds, but selfishly we want this to work for live production, of course.
Thank you.
Any other questions? I guess I'll just finish this up with. If you want to get any more information on this, obviously you can email me, but there's also a snazzy new video up on the SMPTE website. If you go to the SMPTE website and look up, if you just look up Katina on there, you'll find a page with all kinds of information about it and a snazzy new video that kind of talks about what I spent 40 minutes talking about in about 3 minutes. So, all right. Well, thank you very much. Really appreciate it, and enjoy the rest of the show.